ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $14.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, women in New York are about to have their lives changed forever when they get their voice on. Arun Shenoy shares how his Grammy-nominated album,
Rumba Doodle,
fell together, and poetry-inspired journalism by a hot New York Times best-selling author right after the news you want to know.
Hey, this is going to be a great show today. You know, not only do we have great interviews, but we also have a new segment on And Now You Know by Jerry Renfro. Can't wait to hear that.
That sounds great to me.
I know it all from Diogenes to the Foucault, from Ложечкин to Passepartout. И я клянусь, обоссав два пальца, что ты, а? Что музыка пошла от звук говно. Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Na-na-na-na, start wearing.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. From little band that could to star of the spotlight, the music group called Fun dominated the proceedings of the recent Grammy nominations concert live, racking up six of them. Fun are the only act nominated in each of the so-called Big Four categories, picking up nods for Best New Artist, Record and Song of the Year for We Are Young, as well as an Album of the Year nom for Some Nights. There are a handful of other acts who've gotten six nominations each for the 55th Annual Grammy Awards. Frank Ocean is a big contender, competing for Best New Artist. His Channel Orange is up for Album of the Year, and Thinkin' About You picked up a Record of the Year nomination. Jay-Z and Kanye West's were each spread between accolades for their Watch the Throne collaboration and their own respective works. Mumford & Sons' six noms were in several categories, and they've got a chance at Album of the Year. They're competing with the Black Keys, who got five nods, including Album of the Year for El Camino and Record of the Year for Lonely Boy. R&B upstart Miguel also shocked many with five nominations. His Adorn is up for Song of the Year. The other nominees in the race for that category are Kelly Clarkson's Stronger, What Doesn't Kill You, Ed Sheeran's The A-Team, and Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe.
That's going to be your winner.
You think so? Are you predicting, Charlie?
Yeah, that's my prediction there, yeah.
Did you vote for it?
I did.
Yeah. So you put, you have a, you are able to vote in this?
I am a member of the recording, whatever, the Grammys. Yeah, we get to vote. And Cyrus gets to vote too. Because he's such a swinging guy.
Yeah, I voted for Fun.
I like Fun.
That's good.
I played them on my Maya's Mix show on Friday because my theme for Maya's Mix on KSKQ was the best songs of 2012, and I featured that because I really like Fun.
Was the Korean song in there?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm surprised that's not nominated for a song of the year.
Well, what I pictured in my head was Cyrus, his face on it, thanks to the video you made.
Yeah, he's quite a dancer, that Cyrus Emerson. You know, I mean, multi-talented. You know, he's got that Korean dance step down. You know,
it's the cornrows.
Yeah,
and he knows how to thrust his hips.
Yeah, exactly. Too, which is amazing. You know.
Yeah. So yeah, I had Fun for three of the top four. I got Jack White in there.
Oh, Jack White. I voted for Jack White.
Yeah, Blunderbuss. It did manage to crash the party by picking up a nomination. That's true. Best New Artist, we have The Lumineers and Hunter Hayes. They're also in the running, as well as Alabama Shakes, a group that I like.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, the reason I think Call Me Maybe is going to win because it has such an infectious. You hear the song, and you can't get it out of your head.
That's a sign of a song that does well. If you
can't it seems to be like songs like that at the Grammys generally win.
Yeah. Well, most experts said there were no clear-cut favorites, and that analysis proved to be pretty accurate in terms of the nominations. Because after all, there is no one most nominated artist. Actually, for the first time in Grammy history, voters selected 6 songs for Record of the Year. That's pretty unusual. It never happened. And all in all, it's really anybody's guess who's going to walk away with the most hardware at the Grammys. We'll see.
Well, the Grammys is certainly all about music, but here's another thing that's really, I think is great, is the musical Big Fish will swim onto Broadway in 2013 in New York City. Big Fish is a new musical with songs by Andrew Lipa, book by John August, and direction by choreographer Susan Strongman. Is planning to make a splash in Broadway's pond the spring 2013 rather than the previously announced spring 2012. The New York Times first reported the change on November 3rd, citing anonymous production sources who said the new time frame accommodates the schedules of the creative team and the show's intended star, Michael C. Hall, of TV's Dexter. You guys ever watch Dexter?
I've never seen it.
I saw a couple episodes.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's just like it's probably the most popular show on Showtime, and I've seen it, but it's pretty gruesome.
A little blood in the mix?
Yeah, there's like a lot of it, you know? Strongman is a 2011 Tony Award nominee for her direction and choreography of Scottsboro Boys. Is the creative force of nature behind the Tony Award winning Contact, The Producers, and Crazy for You. Composer and lyricist Andrew Lipa was a 2010 Tony Award nominee for his score to The Addams Family, who we were just talking about, Christina Ricci.
Right.
Right. And they've gone on to include other films such as Titan A.E., Charlie's Angels Full Throttle, Corpse Bride, The Nines, that was a good movie, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So there's a lot of Charlies in there, which, you know, makes me feel very important.
We've got our own Charlie right here, so we all feel good about that.
I don't know if I've heard a whole lot of movies with Cyrus or Maya, I don't know.
Yeah, not too many. The Mayan calendar.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't me. I didn't do it.
You were in the news quite a bit.
Yeah, Con Air, Cyrus the Virus.
Oh, okay.
There's one, yep.
Oh, okay. Con Air, yeah. That's a Nicolas Cage movie, right?
You're right. Nicolas Cage.
Oh, okay.
Well, I have a friend that I grew up with, and his name was Django. So I was very interested when I saw a big billboard with that movie name.
Is the D silent? Your friend? Is he silent on his too?
Yeah, and actually Cyrus grew up with him too.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, did you really? You guys actually have a friend named Django?
Yeah, we do have a friend named Django, and I remember him in middle school.
Django, wow. I've heard the kids named, Bingo, B-I-N-G-O, but never Django. So Django was his name-o, huh?
Django was his name-o, and a lot of people were looking forward to this movie. You know, there's a lot of Quentin Tarantino fans out there.
I am certainly one, and I have not seen the movie yet. I'm going to see it tonight. I would love to see it. Let's hear about it.
I haven't seen it either. Cyrus, you've seen it, right?
I did, yeah. It's a cross between a spaghetti western and blaxploitation picture, but it's fully formed, unapologetic, and easily one of the best popcorn flicks of the year. The movie has Inglourious Bastards standout Christoph Waltz, who plays a bounty hunter masquerading as a dentist.
Oh, maybe he used dental floss as his lasso.
Oh, man.
German by birth, Mr. Schultz goes by the more distinguished Dr. King, kind of like Martin Luther King, and he's tracking a gang of outlaw brothers. And in order to do so, he enlists a slave, Jamie Foxx, who plays Django, because he can identify them by sight.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, as the movie goes along, Dr. King and Django, he frees him from being a slave and then brings him in as a partner and an ally. But eventually, Django gets the upper hand.
Well.
Interesting.
Yes. Do you think Quentin Tarantino did that purposely when he was writing? Because, I know he writes and directs all of his own films. The correlation between slavery, Jamie Foxx, playing Django, and the white man that's on the hunt for the bad guys, right? Leonardo DiCaprio is named Dr. King. Come on, man.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think he's kind of like a big fan of historical revenge fantasies or something.
Mm.
Yeah, it's typical, even quintessential Tarantino, to take two different genres, dust them up, and smash them together. It's what he does, you know. He sniffs out the nitro and introduces the glycerin.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so, you know, with a slave movie, Django, and then also Lincoln came out recently, so
right. People
want to compare the two films. Lincoln is grounded in historical research and offers a shrewd analysis of idealism and political pragmatism, while Django is more of a pure fantasy flick. But it's the kind of, it's the fantasy, and if you will, maybe the poetry that truly rattles the chains of slavery.
Yeah, that's the great, you know, novels. I love novels where they're loosely based in history, you know, and it's great, you know, that it comes out of this, you know, with the head-to-head with Lincoln, which is a historical documentary, you know, as opposed to Quentin Tarantino's this is my interpretation of what was going on in the West at those times. I saw Jamie Foxx on an interview, and he was talking about making the movie, and they asked him if it was hard to play a slave, and he said, yeah, it was really hard, because he said Quentin would tell me when I got there, he's the type of director that wants everyone to be in character. And so he said, I asked him, well, what do you mean in character? He goes, well, I mean you're playing a slave in the 1860s or whatever. And he says, so you have to have that mindset when you come to the studio. You know, and he goes, well, I have that mindset. And he said, well, he goes, here's the thing. 18th century slaves didn't drive a BMW from Beverly Hills.
That's a good point.
He goes, and that's what you're doing, you know. And so then he was expanding on it a little bit further, and he was saying that, he goes, so we all got really into character. And two great examples that he used was one, there's one scene in the movie where a woman's supposed to come out of a, you know, she's been like down in the hole for punishment, and that she's supposed to be all freaked out, right? He goes, so he actually had her in there for
in
3 hours. Yeah, he put her in there for 3 hours so that when they opened it up, she'd be like,
she could
whoa,
be fully in character.
Right. And then he said, Jamie Foxx was saying he went to the set, and he went to talk to Leonardo DiCaprio, and he goes, hey, Leo, how's it going? How do you like this? And he said, Leonardo DiCaprio wouldn't talk to him because he was in character.
Oh, so he was playing.
He was playing in character because he's the slave master.
So he shouldn't take it personally.
Yeah, he couldn't take it personally. And you know, Fox was saying he started to take it personally until Samuel L. Jackson told him, dude, we're just making a movie.
Right. This is, you
know? Yeah, well, you know, Tarantino's take on this time in history is definitely unique. And Jamie Foxx's character is one of a kind. I don't think you've ever seen a black slave character like this in any American movie ever made before. It's just, you know,
well, I look forward
brand
to,
new.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing it tonight. And
let us know what you think,
Charlie. Yeah, I will. Well, you know, Django came out on Christmas Day, but there was another thing that came out on Christmas Day quite a while ago. Maya's going to tell us all about it.
Yeah, 65 years ago, in fact.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
What's that?
Jimmy Buffett was born.
Oh, right on.
On the 25th of December. And when it comes to...
Was he wearing his flip-flops?
Baby flip-flops.
Or well, did he already have that new tattoo, or what was the story about?
Yeah. Well, the truth is that when it comes to receiving, you know, you do that on Christmas, every day must really feel like Christmas for the singer, because he's actually one of the world's wealthiest musicians.
Wow.
Didn't know that.
I did not.
And never mind that he hasn't had his own song in the Billboard Top 40 since 1979. Yeah, but his fortune is estimated to be around $400 million, which puts him behind only Paul McCartney and Bono and ahead of Elton John and Mick Jagger. Well, imagine the kind of Christmas / birthday you'd be enjoying if you were the beneficiary of properties, foods, outdoor furniture, apparel, a satellite radio channel, and best-selling wow. novels. I never knew this about Jimmy Buffett.
I didn't either. I just thought he was wasting away again a month ago.
Well, just to give you the quick rundown, because it was so interesting reading about, you know, his products and stuff. For his properties, Margaritaville is actually a chain of restaurants, retail stores, hotels, nightclubs, and casinos.
And it's a good restaurant. I've eaten there in Key West.
Have you? Was
yeah.
it tasty?
It was good. Yeah. He wasn't there, but...
Is it seafood?
Pardon me?
Seafood?
It's seafood and burgers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, the one on the Las Vegas Strip is dubbed as the top grossing restaurant in the nation, and it nabs about $43 million a year.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of regarded as Vegas' top
dining. That's a lot of Las Vegas assault.
The food. So also Buffett keeps it kind of tropical because he has products like the Calypso coconut shrimp, Captain's calamari rings, tortilla chips, and surprise, surprise, margarita mix.
Wow.
Yeah. So maybe it would go well brand. With a cheeseburger in paradise.
You're right.
Yeah. You should have those on the menu. Also outdoor furniture because he's, you know, living in that cocktail sipping mode. You'll need one of his $350 Adirondacks, as well as maybe, you know, $300 Margaritaville tiki bar, you know?
I need one of those.
Yeah, wasting too. Away is priceless.
What's funny is like his song, the lyric is like, I blew up my flip-flop, I stepped on a pop-top. And they don't even make pop-tops anymore. Back then in the day, you would, you know, open up a soda or beer or whatever and with a pop-top.
Oh.
And it came off.
I haven't even heard of it.
Right, because it was before your time. Before my time, I read an historical novel.
Yeah, right. Well, and he also has Radio Margaritaville, which is a worldwide internet station that features 24-hour music and live webcasts of most of Jimmy Buffett concerts. Can be heard on iTunes, interestingly enough. He has novels. Buffett has a written best-selling memoir, A Pirate Looks at 50.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know this.
I didn't know either.
And he has 4 novels and 2 children's books. And none really became a favorite among book critics.
Well, no wonder he lost all of his hair, man.
But 2 actually made it to #1 on the New York Times list. Wow. So these are, you know, all this stuff. It's kind of amazing. And where does music figure into it? Buffett still tours, but he only does like 40 concerts a year. So I think we should wish Buffett a belated birthday.
We should.
Or as happy he once birthday. Put it, he is the Christmas war baby turned island boy, born on the day W.C. Fields died. That's the way he puts it.
Well, you know what? He certainly had a colorful life and career, you know? Hats off to him, man. Speaking of an island-hopping boy.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen, he could be promoting Margaritaville maybe next time.
I think he's heavily invested in that company.
Yeah, well, you might have to after what happened at the Epic Bar opening.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Now
this
I'm curious.
This is crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Homophobic slur. Charlie Sheen. Aww. Yeah. He was down at the Epic Bar, rooftop 4-story El Gonzo Hotel in San Jose del Cabo, near Cabo San Lucas, on the southern tip of Baja California, tweeting pictures of himself and the mayor of Los Angeles, saying from Boyle Heights to mayor of L.A. And he was there to present Slash, former lead guitarist of Guns N' Roses, when he was caught on video using a homophobic slur.
Oh.
Yeah. How are we doing? Sheen says to the crowd as he takes the stage. Lying bunch of bleep. How are we doing? Sheen later issued an apology stating, I meant no ill will and intended to hurt no one, and I apologize if I offended anyone. I meant to say maggot, yeah. But I have a lisp. Which, yeah. If it was a lisp, maybe it would be
smaggot. You know what? Maybe I'm one of the
something.
Only few people that believe this, but I think that he was just drunk.
It could be. Sounds
and,
like it.
And, you know, I really don't think that he had any malicious, you know, ill will towards anybody. I think he was just drunk and he just, hey, how's it going? And didn't come out maggot, you know? And then that's one of the problems of being, you know, so famous. Is like everything you say is scrutinized.
Mm-hmm. It would be hard to be in the spotlight. Like that, and have everything be identified as, you know, woo.
Yeah.
And then, you know, misinterpreted and interpreted one way or the other, you know.
Well, that's kind of how it is for us all the time. I mean, you know, you go out to lunch after the show, and it's just like.
Well, from one bad boy to another, Tom Cruise, is he still the go-to action hero that everyone's come to know in Hollywood?
$20 million a picture says yes.
Well, Jack Reacher, his current movie, says yes. You know, I mean, given his age and his tough year that he's had in the tabloids, Tom Cruise is still the go-to guy in Hollywood. That everyone's looking for in an action hero? The answer is yes, based upon the performance from his current movie, Paramount's Jack Reacher, which I went and saw, and it was really a good movie.
Hmm.
And, you know, I saw it because the book was so darn good, and I wanted to see, you know.
How they did a good job on the movie?
Yeah, the book was rather long, and the screenwriter did a really, really good job on it. And it's taken in over $45 million in 10 days since its opening, with $15.6 million to a very crowded and competitive holiday market. That was a tough market to come into. Les Miserables, you know.
Django.
Mm-hmm. Hobbit, you know, and then you got Jack Reacher, which has nothing to do, you know, with the holidays.
Hmm. And it still did well.
It still did well. And they think that all signs point to it surpassing $200 million worldwide at the box office. That's not a blockbuster figure. And Paramount is saying mum about whether they're going to have a sequel to it or not because there are 17 books in the series. But they shot the movie with a $60 million budget. They expect to make $200 million on it, so they're definitely making money. So, Cruz is now 50, which is kind of hard to believe, which might be the new 40 in the real world. But he's starting to get on in years and in the realm of action heroes. We'll give you an example. Like Daniel Craig is 44 and Jeremy Renner is 41. We're a long way from Top Gun. You know, Top Gun came out in 1986, so.
He was a little younger then.
So they're probably going to make some room for Tom Cruise there in the new Expendables franchise. You know, that franchise with all the old-time action heroes, Arnold and
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've made like three of those.
And Jet Li. Who's the other one? It's in Earl Van Damme. Yeah. But in the meantime, Richard is going to be profitable for Paramount, and Cruise's portrayal of the tough ex-military drifter has drawn critical kudos, so there's a bit of momentum now, and it's clear that his upcoming film schedule in Hollywood is still convinced that he can carry on in his action film role. Next for Cruz will be two sci-fi movies, Universal's Oblivion, due out in April, and All You Need Is Kill, which is set for March 14th from Warner Brothers. After that, there's the potential Van Helsing remake of the Universal, and Mission Impossible 5 is coming out from Paramount in 2015. So the dude's got like all kinds of things going on. And speaking of Mission Impossible, the Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol was a huge hit for Paramount, taking in over $700 million worldwide in 2011. And, Night and Day, the movie he made with Cameron Diaz and Valkyrie, and all these movies made like well over $200 million. His only disappointment was Rock of Ages. And I guess people want to see Tom Cruise as an action star and not a singer. Well, you know, from action heroes to action movies, Maya, don't you have a story about Angelina Jolie in World War II film?
Yeah, she really is no stranger to directing films about the terrors of war. Angelina Jolie says she fought for the opportunity to direct the World War II story Unbroken. It's based on a book of the same name by Laura Hillenbrand, which spent more than a dozen weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. This author also wrote Seabiscuit, an American legend, the basis of the 2003 film that got 7 Oscar nominations.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's reported that Jolie campaigned passionately against other directors for the film.
I would have loved to have been a director there.
That would be very interesting to hear. Well, in a written announcement, Jolie said,
I have Chanel number 5, you know.
Thanks to his...
Thanks to her husband.
Yeah. Yeah. You got talked into it.
I did. It's a lifestyle.
Jolie said, I read Laura...
We call her Angie. Go ahead. Angie.
Angie said, I read Laura Hillenbrand's brilliant book, and I was so moved by Louis Zamperini's heroic story, I immediately began to fight for the opportunity to make this film. So Unbroken follows the survival story of Olympic athlete Zamperini, and he became a prisoner of war in World War II after living through a plane crash and floating on a raft for 47 days.
Wow, and he survived? Yeah, that's amazing.
He was captured by the Japanese military.
Oh.
And Jolie expressed, Louis is a true hero and a man of immense humanity, faith, and courage. I am deeply honored to have the chance to tell his inspiring story.
You know, that sounds like it's going to be a great film. You know, I'm
looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's actually going to be Jolie's first time directing for a major studio. Universal Pictures is the one, because before her In the Land of Blood and Honey, it was...
Great film, by the way. I saw that. You can get it on Netflix for all of our listening audience out there. You can watch it on Netflix, stream it live.
Yeah, it really shows her potential as a director, so it'll be interesting to see
what
happens.
It's a great movie, you know, and she was she was just a director on it. And she actually she wrote the movie as well.
Wow.
So she's not just another pretty face.
That's right. I love that. And actually, the Universal Pictures, as part of the film announcement, the studio released a statement that says, in her life and in her work, Angelina has embraced stories and causes involving great struggle and triumph over tremendous odds and the basic human condition. She has a real ability to illustrate the strength and human spirit, which will be essential in telling Lou's story of survival and great heroism.
Yeah, well, you know, good for her. Here's something that's, you know, just on a personal note. Angelina Jolie, besides being a very attractive woman, and she's a pretty good actress, I think she's a much better director. But, you know, for her to start getting merit for her work on, you know, her writing skills, her directing skills, and in the shadow of her famous husband, Brad Pitt, her father... You know, John Voight. I mean, everywhere you go, she's got these huge shadows, you know, around her.
So it's really beautiful to see that she's stepping up into her own strengths.
Exactly.
Daniel Craig, I saw him on Jimmy Kimmel, And he was talking about Skyfall, and he helped. Well, he picked the director. He was at a Hollywood party, ran into the director, you know, drinking, invited him on, and then had to go tell the producers, explain it. And when he was telling Jimmy Kimmel this story, he also dropped Angelina Jolie's name and Quentin Tarantino as other possible people that could do the 007 movies.
Interesting.
Yeah, kind of change it up a little bit. Well, Daniel Craig picked a great director in Sam Mendes because Skyfall has surpassed the $1 billion mark at the worldwide box office.
Man, that is very impressive.
Huge. It's the 14th film in history.
I gotta get out more, man. You know that?
Yeah, two were came out earlier this year. The Dark Knight Rises and Marvel's The Avengers. The Avengers actually ranks third all-time with $1.5 billion. The two top grossing movies of all time are both James Cameron films. Avatar is number one with $2.7 billion, and Titanic is second with $2.1 billion. So there's your top three.
Well, you know what? Here's a little fun fact for you on Avatar.
What?
Matt Damon, the actor, director, writer, he passed on that role.
Oh, I bet he's kind of regretting it now.
Yeah, he said, you know, he wanted to work with James Cameron so badly, and he wanted to do a movie, but, you know, he had other things working.
Missed the chance.
Yeah, well, for the James Bond franchise, this is the 23rd film in 50 years, and this is the highest grossing.
I've seen them all.
You've seen them all. Seen them all. You've been to all of them. This one is the highest grossing, most successful film of all time in the franchise, and it has yet to play in China. So everybody at MGM is thrilled, and Sony too. This is their, you know, this is their highest grossing picture. So, you know, hats off to Skyfall and the James Bond franchise. You know, England really had a great year in 2012.
Yeah, didn't they ever? Have you seen Skyfall?
I did. It was a great movie. It's kind of like, I can see where they were kind of competing against Dark Knight Rises because in both movies, they just have this, like, I mean, the guy is just evil. You know, he doesn't really have, like, a goal or, like, an ambition or, you know, he doesn't really want money. I mean, he's just out to, like, hurt people, you know, and he's really good at what he does. And he's really smart, really intelligent, cunning, and just ice cold. And Daniel Craig has got to stop him. And he does.
You mean Bond?
Yeah, James Bond. James Bond's out to stop him, and he does. And the world is a safer place because of it. You know, it's
okay, folks. Well, we just saved you $14.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah, what's that?
Don't tell anyone, but I've never seen one James Bond movie.
Oh, wow.
I know. Yeah, you should see the look on these guys' faces. Oh, yikes. Okay, I'll do it. I swear.
Now, what if we were to cast you as the next Bond girl? Would you actually go and see the movie?
Maybe. I'd think about it.
Yeah, Bond girls, they set like a fashion standard for their age. It seems like something that you would be interested
in. Well, look at my outfit.
Right.
I'm surprised they haven't noticed you. You probably will be in the next movie, Skyfall 2. Maya, you've got to go see, you know, one of these James Bond films, and I think you'll really enjoy it.
Okay, great. I will do that.
I, you know, would definitely like to see you know, be one of the Bond girls, preferably, you know, somewhere down like in the Dominican Republic.
Why there?
Well, who knows?
Okay. That would be fun.
Well, because the music is so cool down there. I got to tell you, you know, Haiti's president performed a duet with Spanish crooner Julio Iglesias in a celebrity-studded concert in the Dominican Republic to help raise money for impoverished children there. Among the attendees were Dominican fashion designer Oscar de Lorenza, Venezuelan fashion designer Carolina Herrera, and U.S. journalist Barbara Walters. I think we all know who Barbara Walters is. And the Haitian president, Michel Martelly, better known as the Haitian Sensation, and we're also known by his stage name, Sweet Mickey, thank Iglesias for dedicating a concert to One World Tour 2012 for the Haitian children. The proceeds will go to the Pink and White Foundation, a charity run by Martelly and his wife, Sophia. Hey, Maya, you know, I've been really excited about this new segment on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There, called And Now You Know with Jerry Renfro.
Oh, tell me about it, Charlie.
Well, you know, it's this really cool thing. You know how sometimes you you just want to know more about it, but you don't know where to get the information?
Some people know.
And now you know with Jerry Renfield. Jerry.
And I am the guy in the know. I'll tell you that. That's what I do here. And so this week, I got to thinking it's the end of the year. And at the end of the year, the previous year, we start hearing about the big Oscar buzz, the movies from the, you know, everybody's trying to squeeze it in at the last minute before, you know, before the year ends. And one of the big contenders at the box office this year is Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
With Daniel Day-Lewis and Sally Field, who actually, interesting fact, Sally Field was not wanted for the role. She actually had to basically beg Spielberg for the part.
Oh, so, really?
Well, that got me to thinking about Lincoln, and there's a famous line that I'm sure you've all heard that is attributed to Abraham Lincoln, where he says, "You can fool some of the people some of the time, and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time." Have you heard
a
that
famous
quote?
Famous one, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that like so many times my entire life, you know, all 23 years.
Amazing, isn't it? Because it never happened.
Oh, really?
Quote,
are you serious?
Never happened. If it was said by somebody, it wasn't by Abraham Lincoln. So if the 16th president of the United States can constantly be misquoted, I wondered, what other things are we saying every day that never happened? Do you feel lucky, punk? Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry, right? Everybody
right,
knows
right.
that. Yeah, it didn't happen that way. It was close.
You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
So,
oh, okay.
Mostly there. A lot of the misquotes, you know, people just taking things out of context.
That Clint Eastwood line is like iconic.
Yeah, and it didn't happen.
And now you know. Thank you, Jerry.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour.com's special feature. Voice On is about people stepping up because the world needs you. Chrissy McIntyre talked about this and more with some of the event's creators.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. I'm Chrissy McIntyre, and I'm sitting down with the creators of Get Your Voice On, a celebration of women, with Jennifer Wilkoff and Michelle Mattia. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, first and foremost, what is Get Your Voice On?
Get Your Voice On is really the idea behind what it takes for us to have the courage and confidence to be able to speak up and speak out about what it is that we want to do. So it's not necessarily an advocacy approach, but it's really more about you. Who are you? What do you want? What do you need? What are you looking for? And when you express yourself and you actually do get your voice on, that's how things change. And that's what we know, and that's what we are out to support.
So it's an actual event, what you're organizing at the moment. It's a two-day conference in New York City. So explain how this conference will help you do that.
Okay, well, for starters, yes, it is 2 days. It's the first weekend in March, March 1st and 2nd, 2013. What I want to make sure that we note is that this is the premiere. This is going to go on for the next 10 years. It will always be the first weekend in March because, if you aren't aware, March is Women's History Month, and we want to honor it and celebrate it. And what a better way to do so than have this event the first weekend. So part of this conference, too, is to learn the resources to keep moving forward, to keep on keeping on, as well as to be able to say thank you when someone compliments you.
Oh, that's a good one.
That yeah. makes me crazy, and it's not easy. It's not easy. Eye contact isn't easy, and when someone comes up to you and says, "Wow, Jennifer, your talk really inspired me. I'm going to tap into whatever." Jennifer, because I know her, will say thank you. And she will look at you and she will accept that gratitude
right.
and she will engage. I know hundreds of others who will say, "Oh, it's no big deal," and you know, it's just something I do, and they'll look, you know, and they make all these excuses instead of accepting.
Right.
And that's a big part of getting your voice on is accepting gratitude. And we are creating a space that's going to allow that. And Jennifer has used this phrase a lot. This is not a kumbaya. Right, Jennifer?
That's right.
This is not a kumbaya. We're not burning bras. Just because we're celebrating and supporting one another
right.
doesn't make it, you know, we love men too.
Well, this isn't the thing. 60s.
Right.
This is the whatever we are in, 10s, 2010s.
We're in the 2010s. Yeah, absolutely
right. This is
right.
like a new era now.
Right.
We're taking a stride.
So just know that an environment is going to be created that is going to be loving, that is going to be supportive, that is going to be inspiring. And the goal is that whatever you're ready to do, and some of you that are going to show up will be ready to dip your toe.
Right.
Others are going to do the cannonball in. Whatever that is for you, bring that.
Okay.
Who you're willing to show up as, bring that. Because we are going to give you the opportunities to move forward and spread that out.
Well, that's amazing. Now, what do you get out of this? Why are you doing this?
I love that question. You know, the interesting thing for Michelle and I in this experience was this. Originally, when we forged this idea, we intended to co-produce it from behind, sort of
okay.
like your show,
okay.
right? Get behind me and stay there,
yeah.
right? So that was kind of our intention when we did it, and we were committed to doing that and really being a support structure for others. Look, you know, I've been getting my voice on since I was 3 years old, according to my mother. So, you know, there is just nothing I have never spoken up about. So I, you know, understand that that's not necessarily the society and culture way of doing things. And yes, of course, you know, people in different moments said, oh, gee, you know, why do you keep asking all those questions, Jennifer? But at the same time, what happened for us was people started asking us questions.
Right.
Because we are such prominent and such appreciated speakers, people started asking us, well, what are you going to speak about? I want to hear what you have to say. And let me tell you, when you get your voice on, you probably will not stop because people want to know, what do you have inside that beautiful person that you are? I want to know what's inside there. And for us, what happened was we also got asked by those that know us what we were going to speak about, and that is actually now part of what we are doing is we are not only providing the context and the space for this event,
mm-hmm.
which brings us a lot of fulfillment and joy. One of the things that's very important for your listeners to know about me is my why in this life is moving mankind forward.
Okay.
I only do those types of projects that will do that, and I'm committed to that. And so if I can get you to open your mouth and say something to somebody else, I know that mankind is going to move, even if it's just a centimeter. Even if it's, you know, 100 yards like a football field,
mm-hmm.
whatever that is, I know that that's going to happen. This is a passion project because for Michelle and I, it's incredibly fulfilling to understand that you have a delicious life, as Michelle says, and I know that you have the right to remain fabulous. You can speak up at any moment. Nothing that you've ever experienced has kept you from it but you.
Right.
And that's something that's extremely enmeshing in our messages, to bring that forth in such a way to just simply say, it's time for you to get your voice on. I don't care if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, or 70 or beyond.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason why today is not your day to get your voice on. And when you ask us what's in it for us, do you know what will change on the planet if people just opened their mouths?
Mm-hmm.
It became something for us where why wouldn't we do this?
Right.
And that's our challenge to the people who will join us in the room and elsewhere. When is it going to be your day? Because
yeah.
we only get so much time in our lifetime to
yeah.
actually work with. So one of the things for us that's very fulfilling is, how can what you have move the people around you, move the planet?
Right.
And that's fulfilling enough for us. That's what we want.
It's so sad when you, like, you know, people have these accidents, these near-death experiences, like something absolutely traumatic, and that's when they turn their life around. You know, it's like, oh my God, I realized I have a day left. I could be gone tomorrow. And then they start living. This conference is almost like that traumatic car crash. Like, listen, you have this limited time left. It's time to start.
Yes, you know, and I love how you chose to use that analogy.
Thank you.
You're welcome. See? Look at her receiving gratitude and thanks. Very proud. Here's the thing. It is, I agree with you, it is sad that sometimes it takes a tragedy to put somebody in gear.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, what I see happen, and I know Jennifer has seen it, and I spoke about it recently, is that oftentimes what happens is something huge happens, a tragedy or a challenge that seems so large, and it does the exact opposite, where people are like, well, gosh, why aren't I happy? You know, who am I to want something more? I really feel selfish when, you know, I actually do have it good. I mean, you know, I've got this, this, and this in my life, so who am I to want more when so many people are suffering and this, this, and this? And so oftentimes I think that we can scapegoat it as well. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, but once you realize that it's not okay, and that it, you know, the world needs you. The world needs everybody to step up, men and women. And that's what this is about. We are doing this because the world needs you. The world needs you to step into your power, whatever that is. The world needs you to honor and celebrate your gifts, your skills, your talents, whatever those mean. And again, I tell people, a lot of times people are like, oh, well, how can I use that? Volunteer. That's a big part of this, too. You know, Jennifer talking about moving humankind forward. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, our personal missions and visions are very much in alignment. I'm about consciously creating the life you deserve, the life you desire, and at the same time, making a difference, giving back. Giving back first, and then worry about being a star. Mm-hmm. We are all connected. There is a reason why when something serious happens, people come together that normally would not want to meet for a cup of coffee. Right. It is because we are connected. That heart center is connected. And so it's about time that we shift that a little bit. We're seeing it. If we weren't seeing it, Jennifer and I wouldn't have come up with Get Your Voice On.
Right.
And it wouldn't be being received as it is. I'm all about it's time to align and shift our consciousness so our thoughts, words, actions, and emotions are the same. It's one thing to wake up in the morning and say, you know what? I'm going to change. I'm going to step out. I'm going to switch careers. I'm going to become an entrepreneur. I'm going to move to New York City, which is the best city in the world to live. I am going to go on my first vacation. I am going to start a, I'm going to get pregnant at 44. I'm going to become a best-selling author. I am going to find balance in my life. It's one thing to say that, but how are you surrounding those thoughts? Are you then walking out the door and going, today sucks. I'm never going to find the right and perfect person. Oh my, you know, and so it really is about how we're keeping that all together. And I, for one, I get goosebumps every time I speak about this with Jennifer. I get goosebumps when I hear other people talk about it and challenge us with interesting questions. We get interesting questions all the time about this event, even from men who have asked us, this sounds really great, can I come?
Can they come?
Yes.
Yes.
So when it says a celebration of women, I mean, do you feel like the women are more likely to keep it in? Is that why you're kind of gearing it towards women a little bit more? Or do we hold back as women?
This is an observation that Michelle and I have made by being in different rooms and facilitating other rooms and watching and listening and not hearing things, where we feel like the women, as opposed to just all of the different people in the room, are quiet. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, we know they have a lot to say, but right, there's not much being said. And that confuses us, quite frankly. We also have seen a lot of opportunities for women to be in other rooms where they are shown people who know how to do this skill, getting a voice on, as well as they get overloaded with a whole bunch of other skills in the same room. So this skill kind of gets lost. The most important thing to Michelle and I is that this is where it starts. Mm-hmm. When you open your mouth, things change.
Right.
So why wouldn't you just shine the light on getting a voice on? Because once she says something, something else will follow.
Right.
If you continue to stay in the seat and say nothing, what will change for you?
Nothing.
And what will change for you in 10 years?
Yeah, nothing.
And that's one of the things that we're super cognizant about, is that getting your voice on and get your voice on is not just, oh, that's a really cool idea, or, hey, I just want to come and be around that energy.
Right.
It's a skill set, and we're very aware of it. It's a skill set.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very easy thing for me. I've spoken up to my family, to my friends, to my business colleagues, to people I've never met you know, where I just, it's a 30-second stranger. Hey, you know, just like the guy in the elevator that we saw. Right. Hey, it's, you know, it's such a field of freedom that each person is absolutely allowed. There is no ticket for entry. It doesn't cost you a dime. All you have to do is take a deep breath and open it up and let it out. And that's basically what we're all about. This is not about singing solely. This is not about going into the arts and becoming an opera singer or, you know, a jazz singer or anything of that nature. This is beyond that. This is in your everyday life. How do you open your mouth and how do you get that voice on so that you can actually move things along? This is what it's all about. I am well known for getting my voice on, and I am proud of it. And the one thing I can always say to people all the time is, try it.
Yeah.
You know, put it on like a sweater. Let it hug you, let it hold you, and let it move you forward and warm you up. Because once you get warmed up, you're never going to stop.
Where can people go to find more information about this conference?
Go to getyourvoiceon.com. You can also send us an email at connect@getyourvoiceon.com. We will put you on the mailing list. We will keep you informed. If you have any questions, that's the place to email. But if you want to call, we have a toll-free number, 855-917-GYVO.
Get your voice on.
Exactly. You're good.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate having you on the show. Michelle, Jennifer, good luck. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for doing the show. With you.
To learn more about Get Your Voice On, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
From his beach home in Singapore, Arun Chinoy talked with me about his Grammy-nominated world music album, Rumba Doodle. Great album. Let's have a listen to him.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we're speaking with Arun from Singapore.
Thanks for having me on the show, Greg.
Oh, thank you so very much. And as you may or may not hear in the background, we have your new CD playing, Rumba Doodle. Whoa.
Sounds awesome.
It is awesome. You know, and I'm listening to the music. It's very uplifting, and we're starting off with My Ballad Days. What inspired you to be a musician, and how have you enjoyed the journey so far?
I think it's been quite a ride, to be honest. I mean, I never really planned on. I would say many years ago, I never really thought I'd be doing this today, but it was kind of nice that it just happened because I remember for the longest time I was playing in rock bands. I started off as a guitarist and I got into rock music. And I remember playing in bands in college for very many years. And at the time, I remember if I look back about 10 years, maybe 15 years, you know, I had this aspiration that one day I'm going to be like the next Joe Satriani or the next Steve Vai. I mean, everyone has these kind of dreams. And somehow, you know, the problem was I could just never play as well as I wanted to. You always set these standards for yourself, and I was just working so hard at it. And sometimes it was just it just doesn't happen. And along the way, I was just experimenting with other ideas like producing music and arranging music and engineering music, and I suddenly realized that I seemed to have, if I may use the word, a kind of talent to be able to do this, to actually put together, to actually conceptualize and visualize musical pieces right from songwriting right to having a shelf-ready product in terms of going through the entire process and time to putting together. So this is where actually the interest in production started. I had a few demos out of stuff I'd been doing, and I got good reviews. I got good feedback from critics on what I was doing, and I just kept refining it over many years, and I think it kind of just went forward from there. I think about 8 years ago I moved to Singapore, and here I met more musicians who kept inspiring me to kind of experiment more, keep doing more. But quite honestly, I don't think it really took off very seriously, like, I mean, professionally in that sense, till about 3 years ago when this American rock band, Tanadra, they kind of found me online. I think I'd posted some of my rock clips on one of these Indaba kind of sites. They just found me there, and I think they, I mean, at the time, it was just a solo artist, which then kind of morphed into a band. But the idea was it was more like a disco, you know, kind of like a dance group kind of thing, which was more, she was interested in moving into the hard rock space. And she approached me to see whether I could kind of make it happen. So I thought, okay, why not? And through this process, I started auditioning musicians. And it was quite a difficult process. It took months and months of work to try and find the sound and try and find the right studio session pros, maybe other people to help me write the music, people to help me on the engineering side. So I think through this process, I actually formalized an entire production setup, the entire setup for publishing the music and putting it out there. And actually, this was the first serious effort I did. And after this, I just decided that I should probably have my own solo record out. And that's where I started working on this whole flamenco-inspired rock and roll record. I just wanted something which was, which had a very strong roots in rock and roll, but which had a very strong world music element to it, because I really love world music. I've grown up to it. And it was not something that I was consciously trying to do on the side. It was something that just happened. I just found myself using, you know, the Spanish elements and the elements from the percussion, the elements from the guitar, and everything in the music. And it kind of just fell together to a point where I decided, hey, you know, maybe I should just do a full-fledged dual fusion record instead of just experimenting with the music. And Rumba Doodle was born.
When you said Spanish flamenco, you know, there's a lot of flamenco guitar in it, but I like that you're talking about, you know, like world music, because this has a, definitely has a, Rum Doodle has a world feel, because of, every song on it just makes you want to go out and dance, man.
Un, dos, tres, cuatro.
Now, what song stands out the best for you? Are they all your babies?
Quite honestly, I actually like each and every one of them, I would say. And I guess it's also the influences of working with different people, you know, at different periods of times on the music. Like for example, some of the tracks like Fireflies, for example. Or a rock and rigmarole. Rock and rigmarole especially, or even the Blue Sky Happiness Part 1, if you notice, it has a slightly more cinematic kind of feel. Working with some people I hadn't worked before, and these are some new ideas which came at the time. So I think a large part of it has been my musical evolution as well, because I'm always on the lookout for other musicians I can work with, whom I can bounce off ideas with. And inevitably, most of the people who work with me as studio session pros, professional session pros, they end up becoming my co-writers as well, because they get so involved in the songwriting process. And I think that's the best way to bring the music out, because, you know, by yourself, there's always a dry spell, there's always the writer's note, which inevitably sets in, I think, which happens to me very often. So it's very useful to work with different people, get different ideas. And very often I've been in situations where my co-arranger has rearranged the song in ways I could never have imagined possible. You know, and when I listened to it, I could not have imagined the song any other way. And I think this always brings out the best in the music. So I always believe people should collaborate as much as possible. At least I try to do it to ensure a constant stream of good songs. But then I think the other aspect is, as a producer, I need to be a bit careful that there is a coherent feel to the entire record, because when you're doing that, you can often end up with having something that sounds like a best of. You can have something that sounds very different from song to song. And in this case, I tried really hard to have a conformism, a uniformity across the songs, primarily by the groove section. So I have a very consistent drum and bass section, which is there, as well as the flamenco guitar, which is kind of an element which is common across all of the songs, irrespective of the feel, whether it's just a guitar song or more like a piano-inspired song. I think these three elements are kind of holds, it's like the glue which kind of holds the record together across all the 11 songs.
Right, it's more of a, there's a continuity to it. Now, do you have a website that everyone can go to?
The official website which I have is the one with my name on it, which is Arun, A-R-U-N, Shenoy, S-H-E-N-O-Y.com. I think this is like, I try to make it like a one-stop web page where, you know, all of the music, all of the videos, and all of the artwork, all of the liner notes, and everything can be accessed online, as opposed to sending people to, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and all these other sites, where I also do have my presence. But these days, I prefer to use more of my own website.
All right, we want to encourage everybody to go out and get a copy of Rum Doodle, whether it's digital, and you can get it on Amazon or iTunes. It's available through CD Baby for your physical CD with just fantastic artwork. And it's been great having you on, Arun. And you can check out Arun on justimagineinc.com, where he is a featured musical guest.
To learn more about Arun Shenoy, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
And all the lost souls say, every day I wake up.
This is How You Lose Her, a New York Times bestseller and a 2012 National Book Award finalist. By turns hilarious and devastating, raucous and tender, lay bare the infinite longing and inevitable weaknesses of our all-too-human hearts. They capture the heat of new passion, the recklessness with which we betray what we most treasure, and the torture we go through, the begging, the crawling over glass, the crying, to try to mend what we've broken beyond repair. They recall the echoes that intimacy leaves behind, even where we thought we did not care. They teach us the catechisms of affections, that the faithlessness of our fathers is visited upon the children, that what we do unto our exes is inevitably done in turn unto us, and that loving thy neighbor as thyself is a commandment more safely honored on a platonic than erotic terms. Most of all, these stories remind us that the habit of passion always triumphs over experience, and that love, when it hits us for real, has a half-life of forever.
I don't even want to tell you where we're at. We're in Casa de Campo, the resort that Shane forgot. The average asshole would love this place. It's the largest, wealthiest resort on the island, which means it's a goddamn fortress, walled away from everybody else. Guachimanes and peacocks and ambitious topiaries everywhere. Advertises itself in the States as its own country, and it might as well be. Has its own airport, 36 holes of golf, beaches so white they ache to be trampled, and the only island Dominicans you're guaranteed to see are either caked up or changing your sheets. Let's just say my abuelo has never been here, and neither has yours. This is where the Garcias and the Colons come to relax after a long month of oppressing the masses, where the Tutumpotes can trade tips with their colleagues from abroad. Chill here too long, and you'll be sure to have your ghetto pass revoked, no questions asked. We wake up bright and early for the buffet, get served by cheerful women in Aunt Jemima costumes, I shit you not. These sisters even have to wear hankies on their heads. Magda is scratching out a couple of cards to her family. I want to talk about the day before, but when I bring it up, she puts down her pen, jams on her shades. I feel like you're pressuring me. How am I pressuring you, I ask. I just want some space to myself every now and then. Every time I'm with you, I have this sense that you want something from me. Time to yourself, I say. What does that mean? Like maybe once a day, you do one thing, I do another. Like when? Now? It doesn't have to be now. She looks exasperated. Why don't we just go down to the beach? As we walk over to the courtesy golf cart, I say, I feel like you rejected my whole country, Magda. Don't be ridiculous. She drops one hand in my lap. I just want to relax. What's wrong with that? The sun is blazing, and the blue of the ocean is an overload on the brain. Casa de Campo has got beaches, the way the rest of the island has got problems. These, though, have no merengue, no little kids, nobody trying to sell you chicharrones, and there's a map.
Junot Diaz burst into the literary world with Drown, a collection of indelible stories that revealed a major new writer with the eye of a journalist and the tongue of a poet, says Newsweek. In Diaz's magisterial voice, the trials and tribulations of sex-obsessed objectifiers become a revelation, Boston Globe. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Ain't no illusion, try to click with what you got. Taste every potion, cause if you like yourself a lot, go let it out, go let it in, and go let it out.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
And I'm Charlie Stanton. And remember that we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.
Life is precocious.